Welcome back, everybody. You are listening to episode 18 of Clappercast Hockey Podcast. My name is Sean. My co-host, Burke, is currently in the middle of moving, and he doesn't exactly have a recording set up at his new place yet, so it's just going to be me doing a solo episode today. Secondly, you'll probably notice, compared to previous episodes, there's a bit of a change in the audio quality. That's due to the recording setup for myself changing as well. Hopefully it turns out okay. We'll try and do what we can in the editing process to make it as good as we can with what we have. So first off, I want to do a bit of a review here on the Eastern Conference and Western Conference finals. Probably start out East here because that series ended a lot quicker and it's been quite a while. So there's not a whole lot to say about this series. I'm kind of surprised that Boston was able to sweep. But then again, looking at how run down Carolina's roster was by the end of it, they were missing key players with injuries and guys who were quite obviously still playing through injuries. So it makes sense when you consider that Boston was able to kind of breeze right through them. Curtis McElhinney was pretty impressive in the games that he played. He ended up replacing Peter Mrazek fairly early on in the series. And he held his own. You really have to give him credit for being a backup goalie who just jumped in and took the reins, and he didn't play bad at all for the situation that he was in. And I guess that's why he's affectionately earned the nickname McBackup, because, you know, he is a backup, but he's also probably one of, if not the best backup in the league. Now, on the other hand of this, I really want to mention and give credit to just how good the Boston Bruins are. And I've talked about this in a previous episode where the Boston Bruins are, in my opinion, one of, if not the best built team in the league for a variety of reasons. And one of those reasons is their versatility and adaptability of their play style. You'll notice it's especially obvious throughout these playoffs because every single opponent they've had has been a team that plays a different style. You'll remember the first series against Toronto, and Toronto is an offensive, speedy team. The Bruins are able to counter that. They're able to shut down a little bit and just let the Leafs play into their trap when they're trying to make stretch passes, when they're trying to just rush down the ice, that Boston is there to prevent that. And additionally, they also have speed throughout the roster. Guys like Marchand, Pasternak, Stephen Kampfer, and Carson Kuhlman. They're not like regular roster players, but they're also guys who can substitute in and give the roster the speed that it needs in place of someone like David Backes, who, yeah, he's a great leader, great physical player, but yeah, he's a little bit slower at this point in his career. So we can see that Boston is able to play that style against a speedy, fast team. Now, directly compared to that is what Columbus brought against Boston. Columbus was a more defensive team. They're fast, but they really dominate in shutting down the other team and playing more of a trap system. Once again, Boston was able to counter that by aggressively attacking that trap. They were able to match the physicality of Columbus and keep them pretty much negated as much of an offensive threat. And they're good at puck control, they're good at puck retrieval, and physicality on the forecheck is crucial when you're trying to play against a team that traps like Columbus. And obviously they're pretty good at it considering they got through Tampa Bay relatively easily. And once again, that's just another example of a style that Boston can play. So in this Eastern Conference final, we have the Carolina Hurricanes, pardon me. And once again, they're a little bit of a different style. They play incredibly fast-paced, high-tempo, aggressive hockey. We saw them use the strategy against the New York Islanders. They would be attacking the puck carrier before the guy even had the puck. They were not giving the Islanders any room to make any decisions, to have any time with the puck. They were playing one step ahead constantly. And that's a very, very difficult system to be able to counter for any team. But once again, Boston was able to counter it. They match that speed. They are incredibly fast with their decision-making. They move the puck around exceptionally well. And they also are really good on a counter-attack and with like quick attacks off the rush. And that's kind of what you have to do when you aren't going to have much time to do anything with the puck, as you would find with playing against a team like Carolina. So I have absolutely no doubts that moving forward here, Boston's going to be able to adapt and counter whatever St. Louis brings. This is just a really, really good testament to how well the Bruins are built. From top to bottom, they have pretty much every single quality that a team needs to succeed. In the basic stuff, they have the offense. I mean, their top line is regularly in the top 10, 15, 20 scorers in the league. Marchand and Pasternak and Bergeron are all usually around a point per game. Their defense, you know, Patrice Bergeron being the perennial Selke candidate, if not winner. Zdeno Chara being one of the better shutdown defensemen of the last couple of decades. And moving down the rest of the roster too, they're very, very solid and reliable. You never have to worry about it. And especially when you have guys like Bergeron and Chara, who are the key leaders of the Bruins team, teaching all of the young players they're getting in, of course there's going to be a commitment to team defense. And you're seeing that in younger players on the front end, Jake DeBrusque, he's a speedy and effective two-way forward. And we will never be able to measure just how much of an impact that Zdeno Chara will have had on Torey Krug, Brandon Carlo, and Charlie McAvoy's development into the full-time NHLers that they are now. And then moving down into the goaltending, that Tuukka Rask over the last decade has regularly been a top five goalie in the league. He's always in that discussion. He's never really the best in the league. There's always been someone who's better. It's kind of been a mix of like Quick and Lundqvist and Carey Price. Rask has never been able to really make it to like the best goalie in the league, but he's still one of the top five every single year. This playoffs, he has absolutely stepped up. Now, I didn't mention this earlier when I was talking about Boston Carolina series, but Tuukka Rask made some incredible saves and keeping the Boston Bruins in games and making sure that Carolina never caught up. That there were the occasional shift or handful of shifts where the Hurricanes were able to implement their game and start playing the game with the pace and the tempo that they normally do, and they overwhelmed Boston and they got trapped in their own zone. But Tuukka Rask kept the Bruins in it. He made enormous saves, and he's just a solid presence on that back end that the Bruins will always be able to rely on moving forward, especially when they have another team that has offensive threats coming up against the St. Louis Blues, that Tuukka Rask is going to be important to step up there. And looking and continuing on with the Bruins roster, we're looking more into intangibles now. So speed, which isn't exactly an intangible quality, but they aren't just fast skaters, they're fast players. And we're looking more not just at foot speed, but at the speed at which they play the game. And this is how they were able to keep pace and excel against Carolina, by making sure that they're making decisions ahead of time. They're not kind of playing that sit back and wait game and wait for Carolina to make a mistake. They're just playing their game and making Carolina catch up. And this is something that they can do. This is something they're very good at. They have a lot of chemistry. They know where everybody's going to be. And they also seem to have all committed to their system that they know, even if they're playing in other lines, they know what every player is going to be doing and how to make decisions that'll get the puck to them, whether or not they know they're going to be there or not. Another important quality that the team has is the physicality. Over the years, obviously, the Boston Bruins have been referred to as the Big Bad Bruins. They've always been a physical team, and they always have that presence. Now, they're not exactly rough, massive, bone-crushing hits every game, but they engage physically constantly. They're always there and engaging on the forecheck. They're always pressuring on the backcheck, and they don't shy away from physical contact. And this is what we saw against Columbus, where right from the puck drop in game one, they were engaging Columbus physically and not letting Columbus get into the game because of that. The amount of hits, the amount of counter hits, reverse hits, and just engaging and making sure that they're not shying away from any of it to sap any momentum is just one of the major qualities of the Bruins roster. And even though like a lot of their players are not the biggest in the world, we're not talking about Zdeno Chara here, obviously, they're still physical and they still throw hits. And you don't have to be 6'5" to make a big hit. You can still do quite well if you're smaller, looking at a player like Drake Kajula, who is, I don't think he's 6 feet tall, but he's still able to knock players over and not get completely destroyed himself when he's doing so. And the other quality that the Bruins have is that leadership. And I alluded to this before with Patrice Bergeron and Zdeno Chara, but it's definitely worth mentioning again. These are two of the most highly respected and experienced players in the entire league. And the amount of coaching, leadership, structure and support that I imagine these two are able to provide everybody on the roster. Oh, and I forgot to mention David Backes too, another former captain from St. Louis. The importance of those types of players in transitioning a lot of younger guys into the team, into the NHL, you can't really put words on just how important it is to make sure that these guys are getting the correct coaching on how to be NHL players and what it means to be a part of an NHL team and how to handle the day-to-day life of an NHL player, as well as, obviously, how to perform on the ice as an NHL player. The Bruins just have this insanely well-rounded roster that is able to adapt and excel in almost every situation. And once again, in the Eastern Conference Final, they showed just how they can adapt to win. Unfortunately, like I mentioned, the Hurricanes were worn down. They were missing their starting goalie. I believe they were missing two or three of their forwards. They started to kind of get a little bit into discipline and penalty trouble. They were getting frustrated, obviously. You can't blame it all on the difficulties that the Carolina roster was facing at the time. And it's not always about one of the teams losing. You got to count one of the teams won as well. There's a mix and match there. So that was a bit of a surprise series. I thought it was going to go a bit longer, but unfortunately for Carolina anyways, they weren't able to continue on the reign of the bunch of jerks, which still goes down as one of the best storylines in the NHL for this season. So moving out west now to the Western Conference Final between St. Louis and San Jose, I'm honestly quite surprised but pleased that St. Louis won. After the way San Jose had gotten to this point, and also starting to watch the games and then getting to game three with that overtime winner on the hand pass that was not able to be reviewed, you kind of just had this sneaking suspicion that it was probably going to end up being the Sharks making their way through. They just seemed to have the right kind of luck going on for them at the moment. But miraculously, or impressively, I should say, the Blues were able to rebound and win three straight after that hand pass. At this point, I think San Jose kind of had a similar fate to Carolina, where they were starting to get run down. They were missing some key guys, especially by the end of the series. We've talked about this before. Erik Karlsson had been playing at some sort of percentage that is nowhere near 100. And throughout the series, you could just see him struggling every single shift. The camera would pan back to him between shifts on the bench, and he'd be grimacing and stretching his groin out. You could see it in his stride that he looked like he was in pain every time he moved. And for a guy like him, that's just, he excels in that speed and his ability to make plays and just be everywhere. But when you can't really skate as fast as you can, you're in pain, so you can't do as much as you want to, but you're also kind of limited in your decision making as well, that you're not fully clear-headed, so you might be more inclined to make weird decisions, such as, I believe it was game six at the very beginning, he kind of threw a random pass up the boards that got intercepted. And then he went to go block the shot, but he ended up just screening his goalie and it went right in. Can't really blame it all on Erik Karlsson, and it's really, really unfortunate he got injured, because we really want to see this insanely talented and deep roster that the Sharks have developed over these last two seasons. We want to see them succeed. And even more on the injury front by the end, like, they were missing Tomas Hertl and Joe Pavelski, who was kind of injured and re-injured a few times, and their bench was getting pretty thin by the end of it. More, a lot of credit here to Martin Jones as well. That was the biggest question mark for the Sharks going into these playoffs, is Martin Jones was statistically one of, if not the worst starting goalie in the NHL. And if he wasn't going to step up, then there was nowhere else on the Sharks roster to really fill that hole. Their backup, Aaron Dell, has shown being okay, but even then, he's still below average in his position. But after, I think it was about game 5 and 6 of the first round against Vegas, Martin Jones stepped up and he started making the saves that he needed to. He started being an above average NHL goalie. And that is one of the main reasons the Sharks were able to keep going as long as they did. So that's a huge bright spot for them moving forward, is if Martin Jones can, or has suddenly found his game and he can be a good goalie again. That's going to bode well for the Sharks in the future, especially this offseason is going to be really difficult for them. They've got the question mark around Joe Thornton and whether or not he's going to be able to continue on playing. He's been really injured a lot these last few years, and you never know if he's going to be able to make it and rehab properly. And even if he can play again, he's definitely not going to be the player he once was. Then you move into Erik Karlsson. Now, that's a huge hole in the roster. I mean, he was only there for 1 year, so they can quite easily fill it, considering they still have Brent Burns and Mark Edward Vlasic. But that's still a very large hole that they're going to have to fill. And at this point, it's pretty much guaranteed that Karlsson's going to leave. He already posted kind of a cryptic thank you message to the Bay Area for the season and for the memories and stuff like that. So that's usually a sign that he's going away. But moving forward into the offseason for them, if they don't have to worry about that goalie position, they're going to be able to focus on other areas of the roster and develop and replace different players. They don't have to worry about whether or not their goalie's going to be able to do it and covering for him on every other position. And because the team is still good, they're also going to be able to remain competitive even though they might be losing two big pieces because they now have solid players at every single position, which it just bodes really well for them moving past this playoff disappointment. Now, looking into St. Louis, so they're quite the Cinderella story here. That, I mean, this has been said I don't know how many times at this point. It's just every 5 seconds, basically, someone's mentioning this, that they were the last in the league at the beginning of 2019, and now they're going to the Stanley Cup final. The turnaround, the Cinderella story Blues of this season are one of my favorite stories of all time, and I'm totally on their bandwagon. I'm cheering for them to win, especially because Patrick Maroon's on there, and I'm a huge fan of his from his time in Edmonton, and I really want to see him lift the cup. I can just picture that, like, basically trademark Patrick Maroon grin as he's lifting the cup, skating it around, looking for his kid in the stands somewhere. And that would just be such a good story, and I think, personally anyways, that this year's Cinderella story with St. Louis is much better than last year's with Vegas. I was not on board with Vegas, but I'm totally on board St. Louis. This series was pretty fun to watch. It was good hockey. St. Louis, they are a very well-rounded team. They're very deep. They have experience. They have defense. They have offense. Jordan Binnington has been stellar. I'm really looking forward to this Cup Final matchup. It's going to be insanely fun to watch. So on that note, let's move into the Cup Final. My ultimate prediction, I think and I hope that it's going to be a long series. I'm predicting that ultimately Boston's going to win in seven. My co-host Burke says Boston's going to win in six. So both of us are kind of picturing a pretty long series, but we both think Boston's going to come through. I do honestly think that because of all the different praise that I gave the Boston roster beforehand, they're probably going to pull through. I think they have the stronger roster, and I think they do kind of have the advantage in a lot of positions. And once again, their adaptability and versatility is going to be crucial to matching St. Louis. Now, looking at St. Louis's roster compared to Boston's roster, they're surprisingly similar. They both feature more of a defensive physical style. They're both kind of built around that all-around play, the two-way speed, quick attack type play. You know, they're top players. They've got Patrice Bergeron, Ryan O'Reilly. That's going to be a very strong matchup to see two of the best defensive forwards in the league going at it. And honestly, we might even see them like completely neutralized. That's how good these two guys are. I think Bergeron and Marchand, and if Pasternak's playing on that line, I think they probably have a little bit of an edge. But you never know. That Ryan O'Reilly, they've been quiet on St. Louis, some of those bigger players, but they're still good. And maybe it's time, maybe they will step up, and maybe their defensive play will continue and they can shut down that Boston top line, the, you know, widely regarded as the best line in the league. St. Louis's roster, top to bottom, they're deep, and there's a lot of guys on there who are contributing and who are making big plays and who are showing up for the big games. Yeah, they've got the really good top line, but they've also got some solid depth lines as well. Robert Thomas has shown up big time these playoffs. He's fast, he's dynamic, he's creative, and he can probably do enough with the puck to throw the Bruins off and generate some high quality scoring chances. Patrick Maroon, he's not like the most noticeable player in the world, but he's always in the right position, it seems, and he's doing just the little things right that are helping to keep the team in it when he's on the ice. They've also got, you know, one of the better snipers in the league, and he started to play better the last half of the playoffs here, Vladimir Tarasenko. He's probably going to snipe some sort of unreal goal over Rask's shoulder at some point on the power play, and that is a weapon that the Bruins are going to have to keep a very close eye on, because that is a game changer if he can get off a really good shot, that the Bruins are going to have to watch out for that. On their defense, St. Louis has one of the better defensive cores in the league. Led by Petrangelo, they've got Parayko and Bortuzzo and Edmondson. Like, these are huge defensemen. They're physical. They're good defensively, obviously. They're very strong offensively, and they they don't necessarily put up a lot of points, I don't think, but they have absolute rockets of shots from the point. And those types of plays are very, very important to generating offense and not necessarily scoring every time, but generating the chances that you need to make sure that your team's got the momentum and a quick shift in the pace of play. I think the one area where Boston's going to be able to take advantage of the St. Louis Blues is in their goalie. Now, as good and impressive as this rookie phenom has been through his season, through the playoffs, there are a few aspects of his game that the Bruins might be able to pick away at because of how the Bruins can play. Now, if you watch Jordan Binnington closely, he's absolutely outstanding with how fast he is able to react to stuff, his reflexes, his agility, and just his ability to make a save. There's no better way to describe it. But one area where he lacks a little bit is in his movement. And if you watch him closely, you'll notice that he is a little bit slow when he's moving laterally. And he usually makes up for it that this isn't really like a weakness. This isn't like Martin Jones's five hole or Mikko Koskinen's glove hand. This is more of the least strong point of his game is in that movement. That's going to be the only place the Bruins can really take advantage of it. And if they can get Binnington moving, probably going to find that the Bruins are able to pot a few goals. And one of the weakest areas I've seen with Binnington is that he's really, really prone to throwing himself out of position, that he will overcommit to a single chance and he ends up leaving the net open, but doesn't usually go into the net because there's enough guys and enough Blues defenders in the slot to prevent it. But it's still a point that Boston will be able to, obviously they will know about this, they'll be able to see it in their game footage, and they'll be able to take advantage of it. And I believe the Bruins will be able to take advantage of it because of how fast they can move the puck. We saw this against Carolina, just how the Bruins are able to play that one step ahead decision-making game, that they're going to know they have to move the puck around the zone very, very quickly, and they have the players who can do that. Now, whether it's direct passes through the slot, through the crease, or maybe it's bank passes off the boards or rebounds, something is going to happen that Binnington's going to get thrown out of position, and the Bruins are going to be able to capitalize on some sort of positioning error. And I think that's going to be one of the make or break areas for the series, because honestly, there is really no major holes in the Blues roster. Now, looking at this the other way, how exactly is St. Louis supposed to counter this insanely good Bruins roster? And it's quite simply, in my opinion, they're going to be able to play the same game as Boston because of how their roster is built. Even though I think Boston has a more talented roster, if the Blues can play that same game, that counter physical game, that defensive shutdown game that the Bruins are trying to play or going to try to play probably, they're going to eventually get some chances. Tuukka Rask has been really, really good through these playoffs. It's going to be hard to beat him, and it's going to be very, very difficult for them to find a way to do so. But they have the players, some offensive players that are hot. They know how to generate chances. And eventually, I mean, you get the puck in the slot, you get the puck, you know, kind of in the circles, and one of the Blues is going to be able to snipe it. One of them is going to be able to throw it to the net for a rebound. And it doesn't matter what goalie you are, one of those is going to go into the net eventually. And sometimes, honestly, that might be all you need in this series, is just a goal to go your way. You get momentum and you can roll with it. It's going to be such a fun series to watch. I'm very excited for it. I think that I'm probably hyping myself up too much. It's going to end up being disappointing or something, hopefully not. But it's going to be one of the best cup finals in a very long time, I think, in terms of the competitiveness. And the pace of play is going to be exceptional. The offense, the defense, physicality, the goaltending, like, we're going to see highlight reel plays on both sides of this. And one of the greatest things for me is that for the first time in years, like, I don't even know the last time this happened, I'm honestly okay with both teams winning. Like, I'm kind of cheering for St. Louis just because I like their story and because they have guys like Patrick Maroon on the team. But I think Boston's going to win, and I'm honestly okay with either team winning. And I can only hope that the series goes on for a long time so that we have as much of this hockey as possible, because every game's going to be nail-bitingly good. So that's about what I have for the Cup Final. And now we'll just kind of look into some general NHL news. The main one that I wanted to talk about today was the Edmonton Oilers' next head coach. So they got their GM in Kem Holland. Now they're looking at a coach. And throughout this week, Dave Tippett has been revealed, I guess, as the first and only candidate for this job, that it's basically they're down to negotiating the contract with him, and it'll be announced early next week. Now, I'm kind of in the middle on this one. I don't know how to feel about it. I am a pretty big Oilers fan, so like I'm kind of invested in this decision. The one thing that stands out to me is that Ken Holland, in his intro interview, I believe he said something about wanting a head coach that he's going to be able to work with for a long time. He wants that kind of long-term relationship similar to what he had with Babcock in Detroit. The concern that I have with Dave Tippett is that he seems to be that type of coach who has three good seasons and then the team starts declining in points every single year. It's, I think, his two tenures in the league were with Dallas and Arizona, and both times that same thing happened where the first 3 years they were competitive playoff teams. And then after that, they started missing more and more. Now, you could argue that, okay, he took over in Dallas kind of. I'm pretty sure he kind of took over at the end of their little reign of terror at the turn of the century there. And ultimately, you know, that's just the natural cycle of hockey teams where they'll get bad for a few years. And you can also argue in Arizona that, well, okay, that random tumultuous ownership situation combined with no money to sign any good players, that he actually did pretty good for what he had. And that is very true. He took that team to the Western Conference Final 1 year. And I mean, their leading scorers were no superstars. They were pretty just gritty depth-ridden team that grinded their way through the playoffs. So you can't fault him entirely on that. The more concern that I have is just, is Dave Tippett going to be able to be a long-term coach? And this is especially important to me because, as we've seen over the last decade with Edmonton having like 8 coaches, that you want someone who's going to be there for more than a year and a half, more than 2 years. You don't want to keep seeing these constant coaching changes because it's quite clear that the players just end up tuning it out, that it's very difficult for anyone to really follow along, to make sure that they're bought into the system, and eventually you just kind of drown it out and play your own game. And I think Taylor Hall sort of admitted to doing that by the time he got to Dallas Aikens. On the other hand, though, looking at the positive of it, I mean, Dave Tippett is regarded as a defensive-minded coach. I joked before about looking forward to 55-point Connor McDavid because he's going to be a completely defensive player by the end of this. But that's a bit of an exaggeration. I think, you know, McDavid's such a good player that, one, you can't really harness him offensively too much. He's, you know, he might put up a few less points, but he's going to end up being a much better, well-rounded player. Throughout this past season, McDavid and Draisaitl both had very frequent instances of, say, poor defensive play, poor coverage, cheating offensively, kind of doing that cherry-picking thing at the blue line, waiting for the pass, or just being lazy on the back check. And I think a guy like Dave Tippett will be able to teach them both the value of being a two-way player. And I think Draisaitl wants it. He's kind of mentioned that he's okay. Like he'd rather be a better two-way forward than winning the Art Ross every year. So I think he wants to be, and Dave Tippett could be the right coach for him. So I think that would be a very, very good mentor for Leon to develop his game even further, and also to help McDavid give him some of those Crosby-esque, you know, well-rounded player qualities that he's going to need moving forward, especially as the team starts to turn around. And you know, let's be honest, we keep saying this every single year, but they probably will turn around. So we'll have to wait and see on that decision. It's not official yet, and we keep getting mixed messages, as has been the case with most of these searches over the last couple weeks or a few weeks here with the GM as well, that there's a lot of leaks that come out of the Oilers organization. And at this point, with the amount of contradictory information that comes out, I'm honestly wondering if someone in that organization is purposely doing that thing that I think was Tyrion did in Game of Thrones, where he told a handful of different people each a different piece of information to find out which of them leaked it out. It's really funny watching on this, you know, on the same day within a few hours of each other. One reporter says, oh yeah, this Dave Tippett is pretty much hired, be announced shortly. And then 2 hours later, someone says, yeah, it's not happening. And 2 hours later, someone is like, they're negotiating on it. They're negotiating terms, or this person's involved in it. And you kind of wonder if something like that's happening in Edmonton. So that's everything I wanted to cover today. Once again, thank you all for listening to our podcast. Make sure if you like what you're listening to, make sure you rate, subscribe, and share it with your friends. We appreciate it all. If you want to keep up to date on the latest content that we upload, make sure you can follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter as well. So thank you very much, and we'll see you guys next time.